Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Paranexus Universe. It is Thursday, August
21st. A little ahead of yourself there, Doug.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the conference. And this is Doug Kelly here with, obviously, Grant. Hey, Grant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome.
And tonight, first off, we better tell you about a reschedule. We had Frank Fascino Jr. scheduled for tonight, talk about UFOs and his research. Unfortunately, he's had a little bit of an illness come down, so he's not going to be able to join us tonight, but we are going to reschedule him for a future date. And instead, Eric Altman from the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society has so graciously agreed to join us to discuss not just the Bigfoot hoax that happened a few days back, but also how to go about doing a cryptozoological expedition, especially a Bigfoot type of a investigation. So he'll be joining us here in just a few minutes. And in the meantime, we're just going to talk about some different things. We've got to, due to his work schedule, we can't get him on right this minute. It'll be just a few minutes. One of the things I'll mention is we'd love to have your calls if you want to give us a call tonight. Express your views. What do you think about the hoax? You know, what do you think the impact has been or will be or not, whichever it is. The phone number to call in is 347-945-7799. It's there on your screen. We'll put it in the chat room, too. And if you're listening to us and you're not in the Blog Talk Radio chat room, why don't you come on in and we'll take your questions there as well. I'd like to remind everybody about the conference, the Paranexus Conference, coming up in Tampa in October on Friday and Saturday, the 24th and 5th. We'd love to have you there with us. We're going to have a lineup of great speakers, great topics, great fun, a lot of opportunities for networking. It's just going to be a good conference. It's going to be very professionally orchestrated. And I do want to announce, too, that we were forced to change our venue for the conference. I got a call a couple of days ago from the Howard Johnson Hotel, where we had scheduled it back in March, early March. And they had said that due to a screw-up on their part, they had double-booked the meeting room, the ballroom that we were going to have it in. And unfortunately, we were the ones who had booked it later, so they had a prior booking. They had no other place for us, so we were forced to go out and find another location, which I did. It's the Comfort Inn Conference Center. It's also in Tampa. It's right off of 275, Interstate 275 and Busch Boulevard, not too far from Busch Gardens. And the hotel, it really is beautiful inside. It's got a beautiful atrium and a great meeting room area, indoor pool, outdoor pool, atrium room. So I think we found a good, actually probably a prettier alternative for a conference. So we'd love to have you join us. Go take a look at paranexus.org if you're interested. The registration fee is $99, covers you for the full 2 days and all the events. We're going to have the Paranexus Challenge on Friday night, where a couple of teams go to a haunted location. We video broadcast that live back to the group. And then on Saturday night, we're going to have our Spirits and Shadows Costume Ball, which is just after all the education, the workshops. It'd be a good time to let your hair down, so to speak, and have a good time. Plus, Gregory, our spirit medium or medium psychic medium. Why can't I talk tonight? What is up with that?
I don't know, Doug.
I'm not even on drugs either. I mean, come on. So anyway, he's going to be doing a table tipping demonstration, and those are always fascinating. You just got to be there and see it and even participate to really believe it. So got that stuff coming up. So what do you got in the news? I mean, you were talking a little bit about...
Well, you know, folks, we're all still waiting for the results of the Mars Phoenix lander. It's done several soil samples, and we have yet to find out what is going on there. And Doug and I were talking before we went on air that my contention is maybe they have found something, and they're replicating the experiment more than once or twice. It just seems to me that they're taking an awful long time to analyze the results and being really, really cautious. So maybe something on the horizon is going to be, really pique everybody's interest, either yay or nay for life. The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting, too, is if most folks aren't aware of it, you know, NASA plans to phase out the space shuttle in 2010. And shortly before that, there'll be a trip up to fix the Hubble telescope. But after the space shuttle is phased out, there's a program called ARES, and I don't know if many of you have checked it out in the news lately, but there's been a lot of disputes about the safety of this rocket that's going to carry the astronauts, supposedly, or fill in for the space shuttle, carry them up to the space station and eventually take them trips to the moon. And the problem centers around the fact that there's an incredible amount of vibration that this new spacecraft or this new rocket booster is going to subject the astronauts to. So NASA's been scrambling. They're standing by the design. Let's hope that isn't a mistake. They're standing by the design and saying that they can compensate with some sort of spring devices within a rocket. So I thought that was kind of an interesting development. Let's hope NASA gets it right. In the past, they always have, and I have a great deal of admiration for NASA, except when they get a little bit antsy and want to speed ahead with the schedule. But
so they,
you know, interesting thing.
They discovered water, and what else? What have they discovered so far?
The percolate. They've determined that essentially that the soil composition isn't that vastly different from what's in your backyard garden, as far as alkalinity and acidity. That it could conceivably harbor life, and the big trip up here was this percolate, and bear with me if I'm not pronouncing it correctly, because that can have a they think it might have a detrimental effect on life processes. But I think, you know, between you and me, Doug, that's looking at it from something that's completely standpoint of our knowledge, although we do know that, you know, that life is pretty tenacious, and it can exist at some pretty extremes, hot and cold. I think they call them extreme files. So, you know, hey, who knows?
Yeah, that would be great. I know we've got some listeners who have just joined us recently, and I just wanted to repeat the announcement that we were scheduled to have Frank Fascino on with us tonight to talk about UFO research. Unfortunately, he's a little bit under the weather, and he can't appear, but we're going to have him back on in an upcoming show. Tonight, Eric Altman, the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society and a consultant for Paranexus, has graciously agreed to fill in. We're going to talk about the Bigfoot hoax of recent days, and we're also going to talk about Bigfoot investigations. So what we're going to do right now, he had to adjust his schedule, so we're going to try to get him on the line. If you'll bear with us for just a moment, I'm going to put on just a moment or so of music, and then we'll get him on the line and be right back. So hang with us. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy, and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org.
Is there a suppression of UFO and alien information by our government?
All right, folks, this is Doug Kelly. We are back. Me with Grant, we have Eric Altman on the line. Eric is the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society and a consultant for Paranexus. Eric, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be with you guys again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you with us. So tonight we're going to be talking, I'd like to talk about a couple of things among, I'm sure, many. But the recent Bigfoot hoax, get your impressions on that. Maybe you could fill people in a little bit if they haven't been keeping up with it. I'm not sure there's that many of those, but tell us about what transpired with this whole thing, if you could. Let's get us started.
Well, it started about 3, maybe 4 weeks ago. A couple of gentlemen from Georgia named Rick Dyer and Matt Witten were putting out videos on YouTube, and one of the first videos they released was that they were contacted by an ex-convict who was on parole, and he claimed he had shot a Bigfoot and killed it, and they were looking into that. And the YouTube videos kept coming. Eventually got to the point where they announced they had a Bigfoot body. They discovered a Bigfoot body, and they had it on ice, and they were going to prove it to the world. In the meantime, while they were releasing these YouTube videos to the world to see, they were being rather ignorant, rude, making some very disgusting comments towards researchers in the Bigfoot community, especially Lauren Coleman, Matt Moneymaker of the BFRO, and some folks in general. They were pretty rude and ignorant comments, and it really took the Bigfoot community by storm. It was kind of small and really not much fire to it at first, but once we found out, a lot of researchers found out this was going on, it kind of snowballed. And it got to the point where these guys were making all these claims of the Bigfoot body, and they had it on ice, and they were making all these stories and telling all these different things about it. And it got to the point where a gentleman by the name of Steve Calls of Squatch Detective Radio basically went on YouTube himself and called these guys out and said, "Hey, if you got the body like you claim, then come on my show and tell me about it. If you got nothing to hide, why don't you come on and talk about it?" So about maybe 3 weeks ago, they showed up on the show, and they told the world, "Yep, we've got a Bigfoot body in the freezer," and they gave the description of it, the measurements of it, the weight, but they were very vague about a lot of the details on it. From there, a gentleman by the name of Tom Biscardi out of California was introduced to the gentleman. Tom had them on his radio show, and an agreement was made that they would allow Tom to travel down to Georgia to see his body. Tom flew down and claimed he saw the body, and came back. And on August 12th, there was a press release issued stating that the world would be shocked. There was a body. DNA was being tested. They were going to release photos of it. During last week, after the 12th, there was a photo slipped out on Tom's website. It was released, as they claim, accidentally. Yeah. And then another website picked up on it, and they in turn released it to Cryptomundo, and pretty soon it was all over the internet, all over the news. The Bigfoot body, look at it, here it is. And when the picture was released, there was a lot of buzz in the Bigfoot community. Everybody was talking about it, and right away some people started saying, "Hey, this doesn't look right. There's something about the face that just doesn't look right." And investigators in the field began to dig and search throughout the internet, and they came up with a costume. And the costume was from a website called horrordome.com. August the 15th, there was a press release done, as many folks had seen. It was all over CNN. Fox News covered it. It made national, if not worldwide, coverage. Tom got up on the podium along with these two gentlemen from Georgia, and they claimed they had the body, and they claimed they had the DNA, And unfortunately, the DNA that they released to the media at that time, the first strain was, I believe, inconclusive because it was corrupted. The second came back human, and the third was 90-95% opossum. And it didn't bode well with me at the time, but, you know.
Yeah.
I kind of sat there and was like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, I was but there was another word after it.
Yeah.
Use your imagination.
To be honest with you, I remained very optimistic. I was hoping this was the real thing, but
cautiously.
I was skeptical about it. I was, as I said, optimistically cautious, and that's what I continued to say. The press release happened. Tom got up there, as I said. The boys got up there and made their statements, and the Bigfoot community went to work. And they started digging and researching and trying to find anything they could find. Steve Calls, who had the gentleman on their show to begin with back in, not the week prior, but about 2 weeks ago, I would say, estimated 2 Mondays ago. He made arrangements to fly to where the body was to take a look at it and to verify if it was real or not. He did so, and it was reported it was a hoax, nothing more than a gorilla suit, and it hit the media that this was a hoax. The funny thing about this right now that I'm kind of laughing at is everybody that's been involved in this, the two major parties, Biscardi and the boys, are kind of in the process of suing one another over this.
Yeah.
They appear to, well, Biscardi is claiming that he was duped and he was scammed by these two guys. And the two guys were saying that, no, Tom was in on the hoax, and they're saying that he was the perpetrator of it. And now the boys have legal counsel out of Georgia. Tom has hired an attorney, and from what I understand, there's legal charges being pressed against the guys, and there was a large sum of money involved, and now there's a big story about who's going to be sued and who's going to jail, and it's pretty entertaining.
So tell me, what role did Calls play in this charade, if any? I mean, was he because I forget which site it was. I read some of the stuff off The Anomalist and some off of Cryptomundo. I can't remember where it came from, but there was some thing that he was actually involved because he's tight with Biscardi, or do you know anything about that?
Yeah, Steve's a friend of mine. I've known Steve for a number of years. And what's interesting about it is, yes, Steve was involved with Tom Biscardi. He was part of the Searching for Bigfoot team. And he went out in the woods and investigated for Tom, traveled all around the country. So, yes, he did have ties with Tom. I talked to Steve today, and Steve had told me that he officially cut ties with Tom back in April of 2008. And he was doing some freelance investigating for Tom, but he was not officially part of Tom's team. The body was moved to Muncie, Indiana from Atlanta on, I believe it was Thursday night or Friday. They flew to Muncie, Indiana to look at this body, and he did so on his own dime. He paid for the ticket to fly there himself. He quit his job at the advice of Tom, and believing Tom was being honest with him that this body was, in fact, the real thing. I don't believe, talking to Steve, I honestly don't believe that Steve had anything to do with the hoax other than having the two gentlemen meet up with Tom and then flying to the location and looking at the body. Steve is in the process now of coming forward to the media and telling the media what he knows and the involvement, you know, the supposed alleged cover-up that the plan was put together by Tom. That's what Steve's talking about right now in the media. Whether or not there was a cover-up or not, I don't honestly know. I can only tell you what was on the media today on Fox News when Steve released it. But it's been a very interesting and very intriguing story, to say the least.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Eric, I think that, you know, Doug and I have been kicking this around the last couple of days, too. And, you know, I really think the Bigfoot community, the folks that have done all the research, like yourself and the Bigfoot Field Research Organization and a number of other folks, you know, really stepped up to the plate here. And you guys didn't embrace this from day one. You really took a scientific approach. And I think the whole community really needs to be commended on, you know, the effort that they put forth to really seriously you know, try to find out and keep the public aware, because I know for a fact I've been, you know, reading a lot about, you know, visiting these various websites and the research you guys do, and I know that you're dead serious about this and don't, you know, don't buy into the usual hoaxes that come down the road. So, you know, I was just darn proud of you guys for the way you handled it, and I thought you did a great job.
Well, I can't really take credit for getting to the bottom of things. I was in contact with Steve, and I knew some of the things that were going on the night that it was announced it was a hoax. And I talked to him briefly on the phone a few times, and some other folks were involved in it or knew about what was going on behind the scenes, I should say.
I meant the community as a whole. I thought you guys really did a stand-up job on that, you know, because that would have been an easy trap to fall into if we weren't, you know, if you didn't approach it from a professional standpoint. And, you know, because probably everybody would have loved to have seen a paradigm shift, and we would have had this huge primate in North America, you know. It would have been wonderful if it would have been real. So, you know, my hat's off to all the Bigfoot community for, you know, really pursuing the truth.
Right. There's several folks that post on various forums, like the Bigfoot forums and the Bigfoot discussion forums. Those folks really, they share a lot of information. They pretty much found out a lot of it afterwards. But in my opinion, the credit for getting to the bottom of this belongs to a few people. Steve Cald, who went and looked at the body and made the announcement that it was a hoax. And Sean Forker, who got the word out on his radio program as soon as he found out. Those are the folks that really, you know, announced it was a hoax. But, yeah, we didn't buy it. There was a lot of folks that did some inside work as far as finding the costume and pulling up information on these Georgia guys, what they could. And, you know, we worked hard. I shouldn't say we, because I really didn't do much in the getting to the bottom of it. But the folks that did work hard on it, and they deserve all the credit to praise for.
Well, Eric, what impact do you think this will have on the Bigfoot community, paranormal research community at large, if any?
Well, short term, I think it's anything that's brought up in the media as far as Bigfoot is going to be brushed off as this was nothing more than a hoax. You know, and Bigfoot doesn't really exist. You know, see, we proved it. It was a hoax. It was made up. The media is going to be a little more skeptical than they were, if you want to call them believing in Bigfoot, but I think it's not going to leave a black eye on the community. I think what eventually will happen, in my opinion, is that this will be forgotten about in a couple of months. It'll blow over, and you know, the next big story will hopefully come out, and you know, we'll have some good evidence to turn over to the media. But I think it'll blow over. I think the public will forget about it, you know, after a while, and we'll continue to do what we do the best we can and get out there and work harder to get the evidence.
Well, Tom Biscardi, you're probably obviously familiar with him and his escapades in the past, and he's apparently had more than one. There was that big one with George Norrie on Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
Three years ago? And
2005.
Yeah. What other things? Are you aware of any other escapades of his or hoaxes?
Well, there's some things that took place in the 1970s. He was involved with and worked with a filmmaker and a known hoaxer named Ivan Mars. I don't know the full involvement that Tom was involved with him. I don't know if Tom had anything to do with the film. I really don't know much about that, but I do know that he was involved with Ivan Mars, who was a known hoaxer back in the 70s and put out really bad movies. Other than the 2005, they call Stagecoach incident, where Tom claims he was duped into buying the fact that a woman had a Bigfoot in captivity, captured. It was being taken care of by some veterinarians in Happy Camp, California, and he was charging people a fee to watch a webcam feed. That's the only thing I'm aware of.
So tell me this. Why... what's blowing my mind, okay, let's assume for a moment that Tom Biscardi was hoodwinked again, and that's what blows my mind. I mean, especially after the previous one where some lady said she had some in captivity, and here two guys call up and say, yeah, we've got a body, and he just goes to the point of a press conference. And of course, at that point, he said he poked it and prodded it. You know, I'm really having a challenge believing him because of the fact, number one, if somebody had called me and says, hey, I got a Bigfoot body, I'm going to say, yeah, well, I need to see it first. I don't care what
right.
you tell me. Until I see it, we don't do anything. And if
right.
I'm going to take a trip, you know, I'm not going to go back again. I mean, I'm coming to see it. You better damn well show it to me or, you know, you can go find somebody else because it's likely a scam or a hoax. So what's up with that? I mean, you know, and then he said he poked it and prodded it, and it just doesn't mesh for me.
Well, that's part of the whole mystery about this right now is Tom on a national platform in front of the world said, I poked, I prodded it. This is not a mask sewn on a bear hide. He's quoted as saying that, but at the same time, you would think he would know it was fake. He's now claiming that it was still frozen in a block of ice. You know, it was only like part of the corpse exposed, and he was able to touch it. It was hard, and he felt it was real. And now I'm hearing claims that the body is actually stuffed with a variety of animal parts, pig parts, and bones, and eyes, and intestines, and you name it. These Georgia guys apparently, or somebody, stuffed this body with body parts and tried to make it look as convincing as possible. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I'm still curious as to why he made that comment that he poked and prodded it, when in fact that he touched only part of it, as he claims now, and it was frozen solid.
That would imply a lie.
Yeah, I would agree with
Come on,
that.
Give me a break. I mean, the guy poked and prodded it, and it was, you know, frozen in a block of ice. Oh, come on, I mean, God.
Well, you know, I gotta be honest with you guys. I met Tom. In December of 2007, he came to Pennsylvania. He wanted to meet up with a witness who had a sighting report with a park ranger. And I met with Tom, and I met his Searching for Bigfoot team. And like I said, I was very good friends with Steve Calls, and I still am friends with him. I went out in the woods with Tom. Tom was very nice. We had no issues. He treated me very cordially and civilly. I saw nothing to indicate that he was hoaxing anything while he was out in the woods with me. So I've never had an issue or a problem with Tom. I've talked to Tom a couple times on the phone in the past, by email, and that's about the extent of it. What he did, I can't account for why he did what he did or what he said or if he isn't even involved in the hoax. At this point, a lot of indicators are saying that he might have had some involvement in it, but can I say that honestly and knowing 100%? No, I can't.
Well, yeah, obviously, but unfortunately it doesn't look so hot for him. Of course, his reputation is shot regardless, you know, after
yeah.
the second one and, you know, he's claiming and, you know, and got duped again. You know, I'm sorry, either he's one really dumb dude or, you know, something else is afoot here. We do have a question from Dusty who gave you hugs earlier.
Hi, Dusty.
She says how do you think this mess will affect the paranormal community as a whole as far as debunkers and skeptics are concerned?
Well, I think, as we talked a little bit about earlier, the Bigfoot community really rallied together, and I noticed it and others have noticed it too. We came together to discuss the situation, try to get the bottom of it, which if anything it should show that we've scrutinized anything that we see. We're just as skeptical to a point as, you know, the mainstream skeptics are. We want to know for a fact that this is real, and we got to the bottom of it. You know, everybody did their part, whatever, if it was big or little, you know, whether it was speculating on if it was real or not, or going out and finding the costume, or exposing the hoax by flying to a location and touching the body. Everybody worked hard to get to the bottom of this and find out the truth. And the folks are still trying to find out the truth right now if Tom was in fact involved in the hoax or what's going on as the after story develops. I think if the mainstream media sees that and the skeptics see that we worked hard to get to the bottom of it to find out the truth, they may have some respect for us, and that might end up being our salvation.
All right, we got a caller on the line. Let's take the call. Hi, caller. This is Doug. What's your first name?
Doug, this is Steve Coles.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I am very well.
Hey, Steve, and, how are you?
Eric, how are you, my friend? You know,
I'm doing good, buddy.
I have had a lot of time to think and let the the water squirrel, because many people know I was at ground zero this Friday. And I am positive that at some point, Tom Biscardi became complicit with this hoax. The reason being is he lied to me. He said that he was there when they took the DNA. He was right there when they took the DNA sample. He touched it. He described it graphically. And I'm not going to repeat some of the things he said about the genitalia. You know, if I recall the press conference, he said he touched it, smelt it, felt it. Well,
yeah.
That's and I did see the press conference today. So I hadn't had the opportunity to do that. So I'm almost certain. In fact, I am certain because of that email. I got sent on the 11th letter, a forward, that Tom sent me, allegedly from Kurt Nelson, who did the DNA test, that said that the primary amplification said that it was consistent with human/ape. And then it comes out Friday that it's human/possum. 2% human, 98% possum. And I learned that, too, upon my arrival home as well.
What
so
are the
I,
humans
from? Well, probably some skin that may have been in the handling of the possum. May have flaked off and got interacted with the DNA. But just truly, you know, and then there was an attempt at a cover-up Saturday afternoon where he said, you know, let's do this. Let's freeze the thing back over. Georgia boys will take it back. And we'll just say the public pressure was too much for them. And, you know, we'll gag order and not say another thing about it at all. Well, I couldn't stand for that. I refused to stand for that. And, of course, you know, my radio show Monday night, I focused primarily on Winton and Dyer. And I know a lot of people wanted me to crucify Tom right then and there, except for people who didn't realize I was in the middle of Camp Biscardi there. So I had to be very careful what I said, because it would have led not to a life-threatening situation, but it most likely would have led to a physical confrontation, and that would have been very bad for me. But what I did was is I tried to get the information out as quick as possible. And at that time, I really didn't know what to think, whether Tom was involved or not, because I know his story. But the more I get thinking about it, he changed the story on Tuesday, or rather Sunday, when we confronted him with that information, because he did not only lie to me, he lied to everybody there about what he had seen, what he had felt, what he had done. You know, he turns around and he says, well, the thing was frozen over, only a little bit of the head was sticking up, and I just poked it. It felt solid. Well, to me, you know, okay, you have just become complicit in a hoax then, because you're stretching, you're not having any integrity. You're not reporting what you really saw. If he got up before the world and said, hey, you know what, it was frozen over, there's a little piece of head sticking out, and I just touched it a little bit, and then they shooed me away, then you know what, that would have been the right thing to say.
Really?
Of course, had he told me that earlier, I would have said, this is a sham up and down. In fact, I tried to warn him on his first trip down there that this was a sham, but he wanted no part of that. So,
Eric, any comment?
Hey, I've talked to Steve today, and that's what he told me would happen. And I commend you, Steve, for coming on the show today and telling exactly what you saw and what you experienced.
Now, the other thing is now these two nitwits... that's very mild language, what I was calling them off the air, are now saying that Tom and I coach them. Well, I don't know. I can't answer for Tom on that. I haven't seen Tom. The last time I saw Tom Biscardi was when he was in Catskill, New York, back in June. That's the last time. I haven't seen him there at all. Yes. I'm sorry. I haven't seen him at all for this. And I can't answer for that. But I can tell you I've never met Winton. I've never met Dyer in person. The last time I talked to him at length at all was Dyer, and that was on the 28th when I talked to him before the show because I issued a challenge for him to come on my show. He mentioned Tom Biscardi. Ended up, you know, getting them in contact. That was it. That was it for me. I called Dyer on the 29th to thank him for coming on the show, and that was it. It was a 2-minute phone call. You know,
why do you suppose that, I forgot which site I read that story on about, you know, complicit, you know, that you're complicit with it, you know, that you're part of it. Where did that come from?
Well, I really don't know. I haven't been really visiting message boards. You can't realize the physical effects that this whole ordeal has had on me. People are saying a lot of wild things, and I was just out there to get the real truth, get to the real truth. And people got a little angry that I couldn't say that Monday night, but I said it as quick as possible. As soon as I hit the airport, and I hit the airport very early, and everybody was wondering why I wanted to go to the airport so early. And it's because I wanted to get the message out, and I got it through Chris Lindo. I got it out through a special edition radio show. You know, I don't know why the people are saying I'm complicit because of now the Whitten Dyer video that they're coming out saying that, you know, basically I coached him and Tom Biscardi coached him. Well, like I said, I can't speak for Tom. You know, the truth is there. I mean, I've agreed that if anybody wants to polygraph me on any of the stuff I'm telling, I'll take a lie detector test. I won't blink. So,
well, those two people, their credibility is shot as it is right now anyway. I mean, who's going to believe them?
Well, like,
you know,
exactly.
I mean,
they
they've lied ever since the beginning, and one is a police officer. Thank God his chief, that publicity train wreck for him alone must have been a nightmare. And, you know, to think that this guy was a police officer and he could stand up there and try to pull a hoax like this is just incredible. And now that anybody would take him seriously is beyond belief.
Well, you know, there is one organization that is. But I think that's going to work to be changed. I really do. So I hope so.
Well, Steve, I appreciate you calling in. It's good to hear your side of it. It really is.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Good call. Thanks. Take care, Steve. Bye-bye.
Take care, Steve.
All right. Well, that's an interesting call-in. I'm glad.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm glad to be able to hear his side of the story from his own lips, you know, his own words. And I appreciate that. And, I appreciate what you said, Eric, about him earlier.
Yeah, I've known Steve for a number of years, and he's always been on the up and up with me. Unfortunately, with this whole situation with my conference coming up, I had to uninvite Steve from the conference, and Steve and I are working on repairing our friendship. You know, I'll be honest with you, I was honest with him. I was very upset when he wasn't able to come forward and tell the truth on Monday night. And we had a discussion about that, why that happened, and, you know, we're trying to get past that. You know,
what was the
reason? Our friendship.
What was the reason?
Well, as Steve said, he was in the middle of Camp Biscardi. Tom's Searching for Bigfoot team was there where Steve was, and he had no way to the airport other than through these guys, and he didn't want to say, you know, it was come out and make the statements he made tonight. Because he would have had no way to get to the airport. He had no money. He spent his last dime on his plane ticket to fly to Muncie, Indiana. So he was basically broke, and in a small town, he had no idea where he was at. He was in Eaton, Indiana. No idea how to get to the airport, no idea where he was really at. He thought he was in Muncie. And, of course, I'm speaking for Steve based on our conversation today, but I think looking back, if I were in his shoes, and Steve and I talked about this, I would have postponed the conversation until I was in a location where I could speak freely and I wasn't worrying about my travel situation or getting out of there, you know, getting home.
Interesting. Well, what do you, the viewers, the listeners, what do you think? Do you have questions? Do you have statements? Do you have perspectives? If you want to give us a call and share them, we'd love to hear from you, 347-945-7799. There is a question, just to bring this up, Sharon asks, what was those guys' motivation in doing this? And there's a lot of speculation.
At this point, I don't know. And that's something that Steve and I discussed when this began. And Steve had told me he didn't see an end game. You know, he didn't see an outcome. And I had to agree with him. I don't see what their motive was other than to make a joke. But look at what it's cost them. It's cost them severely. One of the gentlemen, Matt Whitten, lost his job over this.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a lawsuit against them and possibly legal action. So their little joke blew up in their face, and now they're going to pay for it.
I agree. You know, I looked at that, and I'm thinking, how could they possibly continue this after a certain period of time? I mean, at some point, they have to put up or shut up. And, you know, what were they thinking? Do you think that they got one of the stories I was reading or some video or whatever, but it was really giving the impression that these two guys were doing what they do. And you had mentioned the YouTube videos that they had put on, and I watched those early on. You know, they were reckless, they were irresponsible, they were demeaning, you know, they were egotistical, and it was like this big joke. They weren't professional in any way, shape, or form on these. And so do you think the impression that this video or article I read was that they kind of were, they basically got stuck because they took it too far, and they, before they knew it, they were enmeshed in this big thing. They blamed it on Tom Bastardi, you know, getting them involved in it or taking it too far. What do you think about that? Do you think they just got, in essence, caught with their pants down?
I honestly don't know. I really can't answer that because I don't know what their motivation was. I don't know why they decided to continue on with it. Logically, you would think, you know, maybe they were trying to get some money out of this or some fame or something. I really don't know what their motives were. You'd have to ask them.
But, you know, it's almost like, you know, it makes you wonder whether or not they started this thing as a practical joke, and then it just spiraled out of control. And then, you know, they got more publicity than they ever thought they were ever going to get. I mean, I'm like you, Eric. I can't read into their motives, but it certainly makes me wonder whether or not the whole thing just spiraled out of control so quickly that they really didn't know how to handle it. And Lions,
well,
seemed like probably the easy way out.
Yeah, it did. And they even went to, prior to a lot of these YouTube videos, they went and contacted their local media in the Atlanta area and did several news reports, which, of course, the Atlanta media kind of laughed at and, you know, threw it out. But they did some stories with the local media down there and told them they had a Bigfoot in the freezer. And what really puzzled me, and it puzzled a lot of folks, and it puzzled Steve because he and I talked about this, is the reputation of the police officer. This is a guy who goes out there and defends us every day. He's a wounded police officer at that. He goes out there and defends us. You know, he's sworn to
let's
uphold.
Let's hope it isn't self-inflicted to make himself
that,
into a hero.
Yeah, well, that remains to be seen as well. But here's a guy that's supposedly an upstanding gentleman in his community, and you know, he went out there and stopped a criminal and supposedly got shot in the hand. And this guy, you know, really didn't have any negative record as far as I'm aware of, or anything to really make him look like a hoaxer or, you know, would perpetrate something like this. And the other gentleman was a former corrections officer. But now we find out that he was nothing more than a con artist and a shyster, too. He had some shady dealings on eBay. And, you know, looking a little deeper, we found out that, yeah, he had some, Steve found out he had some shady dealings as well going on. But the gentleman who was a police officer, no one would ever suspect that a law enforcement officer would come home and come out and perpetrate something like this. It really baffled us as to what the end game was and what the motive was. And you know, I tried to remain cautious as possible because it just didn't make any sense. But that one sticking point of him being a cop and what his end game was, why would a cop do that? It made no sense to me. So I did have a little bit of hope that this might be real based on that.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have a caller on the air. Hi, caller. This is Doug. What's your first name?
Hi, Doug. My first name is Hacker Boy, Blog Talk Radio paranormal host.
Well, nice to have you.
Well,
got a question?
Yeah, well, I have a comment on a comment that was just made.
All right.
Due to my paranormal career and investigating the paranormal, we also had an issue with a sheriff that had a spotting of a Saskatchewan, but apparently they had no flashlights, no radio, and no light.
I'm sorry.
Fascinating. What else happened?
Well, they saw it and they heard it, but there was no recorded evidence, but the sheriff was there.
And where was that at?
It was at an undisclosed location.
Well, so...
I'm speechless.
Yeah. Well,
but now, as far as Saskatchewans are spying, we have seen them as far as South Florida. Have you guys noticed any of them an activity down there?
There's, you know, purported skunk apes in the Florida area, sure.
Sure.
Are you in Saskatchewan?
I'm sorry?
Are you in Saskatchewan? Is that where you're at?
No, I'm not a Saskatchewan. I'm a human being.
That's funny, dude. Where are you located? Where are you calling from?
The world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida.
Oh, okay. Daytona.
Yeah, we had a Saskatchewan. We had a spotting a little bit northeast of Daytona Beach.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, it was in
the
paper.
You guys,
we had 75 inches in the past 48 hours.
That's a lot of rain.
Oh yeah,
well,
it's big time.
And it's Hacker. What's the rest of it? Hacker.
Hacker boy.
Hacker boy. Well, thanks so much for the call, and hope you have a great night. And thanks for listening.
Hope you guys find a good spotting.
I'm sorry?
I said I hope you guys find a spotting.
Ah, yeah, we'll try. Thanks, man. Take care.
Stay dry, dude. Right.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
Okay. That is what it is. We do have a question in the chat room. Grant, you want to take it?
Yeah, Sharon wanted to know if we should form some sort of council of experts in the field when things like this are submitted before it hits the media. So I think what Sharon's asking, I think it's a great idea, and maybe you can answer it, Eric. Do you think that there is a council in the sense that the paranormal community really polices itself, or do you feel that the need for a more formalized sort of committee to review evidence?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think that would ever work in the community. There's so many different ideas and opinions and egos and conflicting personalities. I don't think we could ever come up with a good constructive board of individuals that could fill that role. That's just my opinion. There are some very noted figures in the research community, Dr. Jeffrey Melrum, Dr. Bender Noggle, John Green. There's some folks that in my opinion, should be on a board like that and let them really speak for the community. But, you know, that would be their decision to do so. I think, and especially in a case like this, it was brought out to the public, and Steve investigated the best that he could. He felt, as he said, it was a sham from the beginning, and he tried to warn Tom on it. And the Bigfoot community, in my opinion, as a whole, did a wonderful job in getting to the bottom of this. And I take my hat off to everybody who worked, whatever way, shape, or form, whether it was something minor to something major like Steve did. Whoever was involved in getting to the bottom of this, I applaud everybody for it because that's what needed to be done. And, there's a lot of heated argument, speculation, debate going on right now about the aftermath and who was involved and the implications and everybody's trying to figure out what really went on behind the scenes. But the point is, it was brought out as a hoax, and it's pretty much over and done with. Now the Bigfoot community just is trying to figure out what the truth really was.
Well, you know, the thing that I thought was really interesting, and Doug and I kind of kicked this around, we kicked it around on our website forum, is that, you know, if wouldn't it have been better, you know, one of the things that sent up red flags for me immediately was the fact that if somebody was legitimate about this, they would have certainly have brought in people of authority or with some expertise. They wouldn't have said a word about the body until all the tests were in. So that was red flag number one, I mean, as far as this whole case was concerned. And then it just got more and more convoluted and weirder as things were, because I remember reading at one point in time that the whoever was doing the publicity for these two guys, somebody said that the pathology and the DNA tests were being conducted by Russian scientists. It was like, say what?
Yeah, that was a discussion that was going around the Bigfoot community and then amongst researchers and enthusiasts is, what would you do? How would you do this differently? And what really took place made no sense. You know, logically, you would think you would get in touch with not just one individual, but numerous individuals to have them examine the body before you went public with it. And in my opinion, what I would have done, I would have gotten as much data and as much information from that body as possible, DNA, skin samples, got the scientific community involved to study this creature even before going with it. You know, once you have the scientists on the podium with you, or at the podium with you, I should say, and you have that scientific evidence and even the body to present to the media, you stand a much better chance of being taken seriously than walking up there with a set of photos and a DNA report that doesn't tell you anything.
Would have seemed to have been a much better approach, you know, and I mean, it was just one of those things where it just kind of, you know, just got weirder and weirder as it went on, and you know, it was almost like
sure
everybody's
did.
Going like, when are you going to come, you know, fess up?
Right,
you know?
Yeah, it sure did.
All right, so let me ask you this, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
In light of this whole thing, if somebody has a sighting or, you know, discovers a body, what would you recommend that they do? What would be the steps as a researcher that you would recommend that they do?
Well, this is just my opinion, and it's not the gospel truth. So form your own opinions, or you can talk to other researchers in the field as well. But what I would suggest doing is I would get in touch with an area research organization and find out who in their eyes or in the community would be the best person to get in touch with. Dr. Jeffrey Miller would be an excellent example. And I would go to him first and foremost, with Dr. John Bindernagel, Dr. Henner Fehrenbach. There's some very reputable research organizations out there that work hard, that have the scientific contacts and information that they can get that evidence or what, or body or whatever the case may be to the right people to do the studying and the testing to find out if it's legit or not. So you know, there are some folks on the internet that are really easily accessible. Look up any Bigfoot website, not any Bigfoot website I should say, but look up some Bigfoot websites, contact your local researcher and find out from him or her who are some of the credible research organizations and go from there.
All right, good. Okay, we're coming up at the top of the hour. We'll just make a couple of quick comments. We'll take a quick break, and we're going to come back. And if you have some perspectives or questions that you'd like to share or ask Eric, we'd love to hear from you. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. And we're also going to discuss some of the aspects of a Bigfoot investigation, too, you know, talking about how it should be done, things to look out for, things of that nature, or other, as well as questions from the chat room, too. So, folks, hang with us. We'll be back in just a few. Don't go anywhere. This is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy, and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org.
Is there a suppression of UFO and alien information by our government?
Does the soul continue on after we die?
Climb aboard the black ship of paranormal radio with your host, Captain Jack, on Contact Talk Radio and KRWM 106.9 FM HD3. Or visit WPRTradio.com for more information.
Where will you find a professional association of paranormal researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where can you get research training, share data, and network with other researchers?
Paranexus.org.
Where will you find a set of international standards for paranormal research groups?
Paranexus.org.
Paranexus is a global professional association of progressive paranormal investigators, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, ufologists, and psychically gifted individuals focused on understanding the human condition through the scientific study of paranormal and psychical phenomena. And coming October 2008 to Tampa, Florida, the Paranexus Conference, a learning and networking event unlike any you've attended. Join us for 2 full days of innovative paranormal workshops. Participate in the Paranexus Challenge, where several teams will investigate a secret haunted location. Observe a live table tipping seance at the stroke of midnight. Join us for the Spirits and Shadows Costume Ball. See old friends, meet new friends, win prizes, and have fun.
Paranexus.org.
A place to learn, a place to share, a place to network, a place to come together. Join us now at Paranexus.org. And we're back. This is Doug Kelly with Paranexus Universe with my good friend and partner, colleague, Grant. Hey, Grant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. We're having a great conversation with Eric tonight about the Bigfoot scandal and hoax that's just been revealed all.
Yeah, welcome back, Eric.
Thanks. It was a pleasure to be with you guys again.
Yes, Eric Altman, director of Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society and consultant for Paranexus and Paranexus Research Foundation. We've been having a good discussion, had a nice call-in from Steve Coles, weighing in on things as well. And just a couple of quick mentions, if you've got a perspective or a question, feel free to ask it in the chat room or give us a call. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. I'd like to also remind everybody about the Paranexus Conference coming up in Tampa in October. Friday and Saturday, the 24th and 5th, we'd love to have you there. We've got some nice workshops scheduled. We've got the Paranexus Challenge on Friday night, the Spirits and Shadows Costume Ball on Saturday night for a little fun and entertainment there. Great opportunity to network and meet other researchers, serious researchers in the field, and just a good time. We've really tried to plan it to be just a top-notch conference and very affordable, and just $99 for both days. And that'll get you in, and love to have you. For more information, go to paranexus.org. It's information there. And I do need to also mention again, as I did at the outset of this program, that we, due to a snafu by the Howard Johnson Hotel where we had scheduled the conference, they had double-booked our meeting room. Unfortunately, we got the short end on that one because the other client had booked before us. We booked it in early March. They just told us about that a couple of days ago, and we scrambled and found another venue, another hotel, which is actually pretty nice, the Comfort Inn Conference Center, very beautiful atrium and rooms and indoor pool, and it worked out to be a real nice place, so we're kind of excited. The information has been posted at paranexus.org. We've been talking about Bigfoot-related stuff, the hoax and so forth, as Grant had said. And Eric, would you take a moment and talk about your website as well as the conference you have coming up shortly?
Certainly, thanks. We have a website that's www.pabigfootsociety.com. Lots of good information there, sighting reports. Folks can go there and report a sighting to us and look up local researchers in the Pennsylvania area. If you had a sighting anywhere in the United States and you want to report it to us, please send it to us. We'll be more than happy to forward it on to the researcher that's closest to your area for them to follow up on. I network with researchers from all over the United States, and I'm in contact with many different folks from many different organizations and states, and we'd be happy to pass that along to them. There's a lot of good information on our website, including information about the 2008 East Coast Bigfoot Conference, which is happening in just a little over 30 days from now, on September the 27th, 2008, in Jeanette, Pennsylvania, a place called Pitzer Townhouse Restaurant and Banquet Hall above Pitzer's. We've got East Coast Bigfoot researchers coming in to talk about their research and some of the evidence they've found over the years in their studies. We've got vendors, tables, displays. We've got a Bigfoot auction going on, so a lot of fun that day. It'll run from noon to about 8:30 in the evening. And for more information on that, you can go to our website, pabigfootsociety.com, or the official conference website, which is eastcoastbigfootconference.weebly.com. And that's weebly.com, eastcoastbigfootconference.weebly.com. Check it out. And hopefully everybody can come up and check up on Bigfoot here in the eastern United States.
Yeah, and Eric, email me that link, would you? And we'll put it up on Paranexus and try to...
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Traffic.
And I gotta yell at you guys for a second. Why do you have to be so far away from Pennsylvania?
Oh.
I wish I could...
Well, I know. We wish we could. I was thinking that during the break. Damn. I shouldn't say damn on the radio, huh? I guess I could say... I shouldn't say anything like that, but damn is okay.
Yeah, I would love to attend your conference, and very well might be able to next year.
Cool. Well,
terrific.
Have you. All right, so Bigfoot researcher, how long have you been doing this again?
Field research, I've been doing this about 11 years, and I've been studying the phenomenon, the whole study of Bigfoot, 28 years now.
And you've had a sighting or two, have you, or a close sighting?
No,
sighting?
I've never had a sighting. I've had some unusual and strange experiences in the woods. I believe very well could have been a Bigfoot. I didn't see anything, so I can't say 100% for sure. But, no, I've never seen a creature. I found footprint tracks on several different things. I've heard some strange, unusual screams and vocalizations in the woods, but I've never seen
Okay. Well, let's talk about the investigations. What is it you guys do? Let's say you've got a pretty credible sighting, you've got a location, or you're just going to go out and look. What do you do beforehand to prepare for a Bigfoot expedition?
Well, if we have a sighting, we kind of handle the expedition and sighting a little differently. If we have a sighting come in to us, we want to talk to the witness, of course, to find out as much information as we can. I personally, or a member of the group, or even the group as a whole, will go back through the reports that we have and search other databases to find out if there is a history of sighting reports in that particular area. We want to do our homework first to find out the terrain, the water sources, the food sources available, to find out if it's a suitable area for wildlife or a big creature to be hanging out in. Of course, we want to get to the area and examine for any evidence. We try to treat each location as a crime scene, be very careful and meticulous about destroying any evidence and tromping through the area. So we take our time. We look for any evidence we can find, collect it as forensically as possible, and trying to maintain the integrity of the evidence so it doesn't get corrupted or damaged. Then if we do find anything worthwhile, we send it off to folks that I've networked with to have them look at it for further analysis. As far as expeditions go and outings, We try to look at the area for historical activity, sighting reports, footprint discoveries, strange vocalizations. We try to go into areas where there have been known or recent sightings going on, and we set up base camp. We camp, hike, explore the area looking for evidence and sign of our big hairy friend. So we try to, although we're amateurs and we don't get paid to do this, we spend a lot of our own money out of our own pocket doing this. We try to treat everything that we do as scientifically as possible. We're not trained professionals. We're amateurs in this, so we try to at least
do everything to the best of our ability based on the knowledge that we have and what is shared with us.
Okay. Grant, you have something?
Yeah, I was just wondering, Eric, do you think, and bear with me if I always seem to have trouble with it, do you think that Bigfoot is possibly a descendant? Is it Gigantho or is it Gigantopithecus?
Giganto. Yeah.
Gigantopithecus. Do you think that they may be? Yeah, because of the size and everything else. I know that most paleoanthropologists think that he actually became extinct, 50,000 years ago or something like that?
About 100,000 years ago, yeah.
Okay.
At least 100,000 years ago.
And we do have
fossil evidence of Gigantopithecus, but they've only been found in China and Asia, Indonesia.
But theoretically, it's possible. They could have crossed the land bridge.
Right. And
worked their way down into the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, the other thing that I've often wondered about, and, you know, maybe you can comment to our audience on this, is you know, most skeptics will come out and say, you know, the one thing about Bigfoot is with a creature that big, we should have found the dead one by now. And you know what I'm wondering is, first of all, your knowledge of primatology, do mountain gorillas bury their dead? What are their habits in regards to that? And is it possible that maybe Bigfoot is burying his dead?
It's very possible because as far as I know, primates don't bury their dead, but I'm not really versed very well on the primate studies. I do know a little bit about primates, but I haven't spent a lot of time on primate studies. It's very possible these creatures have a social order like primates, and mm-hmm. it's very possible they do bury their dead. I've heard stories and speculations over the years that they do take them to a secluded area and bury them or roll large boulders over them. Some people have those kind of ideas. Personally, I would think if an animal dies in the forest, it's going to be taken care of by Mother Nature relatively quickly within a week's time. You've got small
sure.
insect predators such as mice, possums, and they eat bones. So I have no doubt that a corpse would decay in the forest very, very quickly. Otherwise, we'd be walking around in the woods and piles of deer bones and bear bones and raccoon bones, you know.
You bet. And, you know, the thing that makes me also wonder, too, is whether or not they operate in small family units or whatever, and, you know, they cover their tracks. And also, do you believe that they're primarily nocturnal?
Well, that seems to be the consensus that they are nocturnal animals. We do get a lot of reports of road sightings where they cross the road in front of a car at night, or people around the campfire or camping in the woods. We also do get sightings during the day as well. I really haven't noticed any trend as far as being more nocturnal than being seen during the day. There's a speculation amongst researchers and enthusiasts, you know, on both sides of the coin. As far as family units, we have received reports. The Bigfoot community as a whole and research organizations have received reports of two or three of these creatures, two apparent parent creatures, and a small child or offspring or several offspring. They're not very common. Usually we get the typical Bigfoot sighting where one creature is seen or maybe two at most, but there have been reports of family units being sighted.
How about, are there any reports that ever come out of Europe?
Yes. There have been reports all over the world. Asia, Australia, China, I mean, Europe, there's sightings everywhere. are they Bigfoot? I don't know. Could they be a relation to the creature? Very possible. I really can't speculate because we don't have all the evidence. But yes, there have been sighting reports in England and, you know, Russia, China, Asia. You know, there have been sighting reports all around the world.
What's your take on the research that's been done? I'm trying to remember, and you're probably familiar with the gentleman, the ex-police officer who's studied the dermal ridges and the material that's been taken off of all the casts. Do you think that's legitimate? I know that that's been criticized, and some people think that it could easily be fake, but what's your take on it, Eric?
Yeah, that's Jimmy Chilcutt. He is a forensic specialist for Conroe, Texas Police Department. I don't know if he's still working there. He is retired. He came forward a few years ago and examined Jeffrey Meldrum's footprint cast and determined that there were ridges on these casts that were not of human or normal primate descent. He's a primate expert as well as far as ridges on feet and hands. He has the largest collection in the world of primate dermal ridges. And he's studied these tracks, and he's made the conclusion that what he's found on the tracks, not all the tracks, but some of the tracks he studied from Jeff Meldrum that do possess the dermal ridges are, in fact, not primate or human. And he's come out publicly and said he does believe that these tracks do represent the ones with the dermal ridges represent an unknown bipedal primate.
Well, Eric, let's talk. You talked about some of the preparations you do before you go out in the field. Can you expand a little bit, maybe give some details on what do you do to approach the area in a forensic manner? What type of precautions do you take? What kind of equipment do you use? What are some of the details of how you plan for that in a forensic sort of way?
Well, as I said, we look at the area historically to find out if there's been sighting reports there, or if there's been activity, what the area is conducive to as far as terrain, water sources, what we're getting into before we just go out tromping in the woods. We want to do our homework and look at this area to see what's all involved and entailed. And once we make that determination of where the sighting took place and the witness is able to take us through that area, we try to take a small team at first because we don't want to go tromping through the woods and mess up any potential evidence. We're very careful in looking for tracks or any possible hair samples. Usually when we go out, the first thing we take with us is a small kit, and that kit would include like a pair of sterilized tweezers, envelopes with non-acid glue on it, so that you can put any hair that's collected in it. So if you put it in a plastic baggie, you're dealing with condensation and the possibility of the hair getting contaminated and decomposing. So you want to make sure that you put it in an acid-free envelope.
Paper?
Paper envelope, yes.
Okay.
And we take out plastic hair or dental stone, depending on what we have with us, so what that researcher has with them to collect any footprint evidence we might find. You have to treat it like a crime scene, really. You have to be very careful and meticulous as to where you walk and where you step and what trees you rub against. You want to examine as much as you can to see if there's any signs of a large animal going through the area. Tree breaks, brush being trampled, large pathways, game trails, if you will, in the woods. And you look for things that just don't look common or they look out of place.
Okay. There's a question in the chat room. Get it here. What do you think, the question from Sharon is, what does Eric think is the main thing the investigations lack? Is it money, not enough people, et cetera?
Pretty much all of the above. We are self-funded. We pay for these things, a lot of these things ourselves out of our own pocket. And some of this equipment is finally starting to come down in price where it's affordable, but a lot of it isn't. A lot of it's very, very expensive. Like in ghost hunting, a lot of the equipment's pretty expensive. So we're funding ourselves and doing the best we can. A major problem that a lot of the Bigfoot researchers have, and we get labeled weekend warriors because of it, is we have jobs. We have full-time jobs. We have families. We have obligations that we need to fulfill. So we're not able to be out in the woods 24/7, and unfortunately, that's what's going to take to really solve this mystery. Somebody who's going to be able to be in the woods 24/7, 7 days a week, months, years at a time, in a particular area with known activity, spending their time and their money in that area, doing it day after day after day. The game cameras we put out aren't producing anything. I haven't seen anything from any game cameras put out yet, and we've had the game cameras in our possession for several years, and I know several organizations are doing game camera projects, putting them out in locations. I haven't heard of anything conclusive from them yet. So I think we just need somebody that has the time and the money and the resources to be out there as much as possible. And that's our biggest setback right now.
Isn't Bushnell offering like $1 million for a Bigfoot picture taken with one of their game cameras?
Yeah, they are. They had an interesting event happen not too long ago in Pennsylvania in September, where a gentleman hung up a Bushnell game camera in an area of north central Pennsylvania and caught an unusual animal on film. And it was being dubbed the Jacob's creature. A lot of speculation if it's not a mangy bear or if it's in fact a juvenile Sasquatch that's bent over sniffing the ground. I don't know what to make of it. At this point, I've looked at it. It doesn't look like a bear to me, but I'm not a bear expert. But Bushnell, because of that, they came up with the concept of, hey, we'll pay somebody $1 million if you get a good picture of a Bigfoot. And they actually have an addition to that contest right now, which is kind of humorous, that they're willing to pay to give out prizes and different awards for the most comical Bigfoot picture or the most interesting or creative Bigfoot picture that people can come up with. And there have been some pretty interesting ones on the website.
What, in addition to the game cameras, what kind of what type of other equipment do you use?
Our group, we use Sony night shot cameras. We use night monocular vision, and you can pick those up for about $250, $300 a piece. Unfortunately, the second and third generation get a little more expensive. We use handheld parabolic microphones to record sightings or record audio noises in the woods. These are connected to digital handheld recorders. We use low-light binoculars that we can use until dusk to sit on hillsides and ravines where we can watch them. Digital cameras. Basically, we have a thermal video camera that we use. It's a black and white thermal that one of our members picked up and has allowed us to use it as well. But basically, you can see in the dark in the black and white format instead of it's like a FLIR camera, but not a color FLIR. So we have that in our access as well.
Ever get anything from it?
Deer, bear, raccoon, common wildlife, but nothing really interesting or conclusive.
All right, here's a couple of other questions. One of them from Dusty. Would Eric come to Florida if we could organize a Florida swamp ape hunt or expedition?
Yeah, I'd love to. If I can get the time off from work and the money saved up, I'd love to come down to Florida. I've got some fellow researchers in the area that I can probably talk into coming along, and yeah, I'd love to do that. That'd be great.
Yeah, especially in the wintertime, huh?
Oh, yeah. Any time of the year, that would be great.
Well, here's another question from Sharon. Do you think the government is looking for Bigfoot as well?
No. No. If they were, I think they'd have them in captivity and in a zoo. I really don't think the government cares very much. If they did have one and they studied it and found it to be harmless, you know, who knows? But I don't think they have any interest in it. I don't think they really care. They've got too many other things to worry about.
Right. Well, the government's purportedly interested in UFOs, so here's another question. Any correlation between UFO sightings and Bigfoot sightings? Could Bigfoot actually be an extraterrestrial since no bodies are ever found?
Yeah, I think Bigfoot comes from another planet, and they drive the UFOs, and they're dropped here on vacation. No, just kidding.
That's what
No, I don't think there's any correlation between the two. What's that?
I said you heard it straight from the researcher.
No, I don't think Bigfoot has anything to do with UFOs. I don't think Bigfoot's an extraterrestrial. I think it's a flesh and blood animal that's extremely elusive, and you know, we're going to get to the bottom of it one of these days.
Do you think it's going to take a body to prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt, Eric?
Yes. At this point, yes.
Sadly, that's going to probably be the case, is it not?
Yeah, somebody's going to have to shoot one or run it over with a car or truck or get lucky enough to find a legitimate body in the woods and get a hold of the right people and, you know, take the right steps to prove it's real, not, you know, hoax something.
To your knowledge, has anybody ever hit one with a car?
I've heard reports, and I've talked to researchers in the field who also have heard reports or have been told by witnesses that they've run over a Bigfoot and killed it or injured it and loped off into the woods. I've never seen anything conclusive. It's hard to say. It's hard to say. Yep. A lot of speculation at this point.
Well, speaking of, you know, capturing or getting one in the field, you approach it. What's your approach? I mean, you're not going out to kill necessarily. You're going out to capture evidence or you know, what's your approach with that? Do you guys use firearms? Do you take them with you? What's your whole thing here?
If we do take firearms with us, I never have carried a firearm in the woods with me other than when I'm hunting. My approach is non-kill. I don't want to kill one of these things. I'd rather see one for myself and study in its natural habitat, hopefully collect enough evidence to take back with me to definitely prove that there was something there, hair or fecal matter or something like that. I'm not out to kill one of these things. I never have been. I personally like to see one for myself.
All right.
Hey, Eric, out of all the, you know, I've heard accounts where they found scat and hair and everything else. Has there ever been any interesting, to your knowledge, any interesting DNA results?
Fecal matter really doesn't produce DNA results. It can tell you what the diet of the animal was, the particular enzymes in the stomach that help digest the food, but it really doesn't produce any DNA results. There have been hair samples collected over the years that they can't match with any known animals. I think Dr. Henner Fehrenbach, if I'm not mistaken, has a dozen or so in his possession that he feels are legitimate Sasquatch hair. I really don't know anything. I mean, at this point, all I'm aware of is that anything that has been collected has come back as unknown, or not being able to be matched with any known specimen. Unfortunately, all that does is tell us it's unknown and not being able to match with any known specimen. Until we have a carcass and we have a base to match this evidence that was collected with, we're never going to really know. It's always going to come back as an unknown specimen. That really doesn't tell us much.
Let me ask you another question. I remember many years ago, because I followed this when I was a young boy, my dad gave me an article of True Magazine that day. I think it was around 1957. That had a story about Sasquatch out in the Pacific Northwest where he had come into a logging camp and was throwing 55-gallon drums around and everything else. And one of the things that I've kind of wondered about is whether or not there was also a rumor, and I think I might have read it in the Saga magazine in the 60s, about a body that a Bigfoot that had been shot in the 19th century and was encased in ice, and it made the carnival rounds and all that kind of stuff, and then the body was lost. Now, do you think there was any truth to that story at all?
I don't know. The body...
Have you heard... Are you familiar with the story?
Yeah, it's the Minnesota Iceman is what it was called.
Yeah, okay.
Supposedly, there was a body in ice, and it was touted around and shown at different carnivals and different malls and stuff like that, and it disappeared. And then... just recently in the 70s, a couple of years later, they started showing this body at fairs and malls. I know here in Pennsylvania, I've had several folks tell me that they recall going to the mall and seeing this body encased in ice. I think that might have been a fake, a copycat. I don't know whatever became the Minnesota Iceman. I don't know what the whole story is behind it, but I do recall hearing about it myself.
Well, here's a question from Dusty. Has Eric had any luck using Bigfoot calls and recording any vocalizations?
No. Others in the field have had success and luck with the Bigfoot calls and the broadcast. We've gotten reply calls and return calls. We've used them. We've had very little luck. And I think the reason we've had very little luck with them is because the quality of recorded alleged Sasquatch calls that's available on the Internet is very poor. When you broadcast them back, there's a lot of white noise, a lot of static, a lot of hiss, and they don't sound natural. I know there are a few researchers like John Freitas out of California that had some success when he was with the BFRO broadcasting some sounds that were recorded in Ohio, and we just recently got those cleaned up sounds from him. He sent them to me in a file that we're going to try those the next time we go out and do a night broadcast and see if we have any luck. But we've never had any success. We've tried everything that you can possibly think of broadcasting out in the woods. As funny as it may seem, we've tried baby crying, we've tried baby cooing and cawing, all kinds of predator calls, women screaming. I got some, as funny as it sounds, I downloaded some sounds off the Internet of women moaning and men moaning and groaning. And
did they say yes, yes, yes?
No, they didn't say yes, yes, yes. Anything we could possibly think might entice the Bigfoot to come in and find out, kind of get his curiosity up and find out what was going on. We've tried. We've had some success at drawing in a pack of wild dogs. we've had some bears gruffs or grunts at us, if you want to call them that. that's the word I'm looking for, when they make that harumph type of noise when they're nearby, the bear grunt. But that's it. We haven't had any Bigfoot screams or calls when we broadcast, but others have.
What kind of equipment do you use to broadcast?
We use a basically a football speaker horn that we were able to purchase from the former Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh. One of our members had that and gave us one to use. We use a CD player and either a boom box or an amplifier to amplify the sound and run it through the speaker and broadcast it.
What are you using to power it?
We usually take out either a 12-volt battery or something to power the amp, or we can use a motorcycle battery. It just depends on the situation what the researcher is going out in the field has.
Like with an inverter?
What's that?
Yeah, with an inverter to make it AC?
Yeah, with a power inverter, yes. We just use something small. We're only out there for maybe half an hour to an hour trying. I think the biggest mistake a lot of researchers are making right now, and this is just my opinion, is when they're broadcasting calls, they're broadcasting them, and they're not giving the animal enough sufficient time to answer back. I've seen some shows where people are just, and we're guilty of it too, they broadcast and they expect a call right away, and that doesn't always happen. So,
how long do you wait?
Usually we broadcast one or two calls and give it about 10, 15 minutes, and then do another broadcast to call and see if we get any answer.
Huh.
We had one expedition where we were out and we were broadcasting one night and we put a predator call tape in, and we're using that repeatedly over and over and over and over again. But we weren't giving it any breaks to see if there was a response to it, and had no luck with that either. So.
Well, here's another question from the chat room. Has Eric found any areas where they've bedded down like great apes?
I've seen things that are very questionable that possibly could be bedding areas. I can't say if they are for sure or not, because we don't know if Bigfoot uses these areas that people speculate are bedding areas. I've seen things that very well could be a bedding area, which they look like something big laid there. I mean, with branches laid down, ferns, pine tree branches that aren't conducive to the trees that are around them, like they've been purposefully brought in from another area. I've seen that. Many of our researchers in our group have seen that on several different occasions. Does that mean the Bigfoot did it? No, but something did, and we have no explanation for it.
All right, here's another question from the chat room. Do you think Bigfoot had a larger population before civilization encroached on them?
It's hard to say. There have been reports dating back to in Pennsylvania in the 1800s. We have the first documented report of 1838. Documented by a newspaper. We have sighting reports going back hundreds of years. The Native Americans have legends and tales of Bigfoot in their folklore and their tales, you know, that hundreds of years going back. And it's hard to say if there was a larger population back then, but they were definitely around, because we know the legends and the tales from the Native Americans talk about them.
It certainly makes you wonder about their intellectual level, because to coexist alongside us, they must be pretty adaptable, especially since we're continually encroaching on you know what little of our wilderness is left. And you know, it's amazing that you know they're turning up in places like Ohio and a lot of sightings are in Oklahoma, but it's just really amazing that they've managed to be successful at doing this.
Yeah, that's one thing that's always amazed me is how they continue to avoid detection and they stay pretty elusive. I personally think there's a low number of these things. I don't think there's a large population of these animals. And I always look at it this way. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack, and that needle is constantly moving. And one thing you mentioned about encroaching their wilderness and the wilderness around us, a lot of folks think that the wilderness is going away, but in fact, there's still a lot of wild area out there. Yes, we are encroaching on some of the wildlife, but there's still a huge, huge, vast amount of area in the United States that's still wild.
Yeah, particularly out in the Pacific Northwest. You know, I heard a report several years ago, Eric, and maybe you can, and it was like a singular sort of thing. I heard or I read on a website where some Department of Natural Resources, either state or federal, out in the Pacific Northwest, were doing some sort of, you know, forestry surveys, and they were using, I don't know, some different type of aerial photography or heat sensoring or something. Maybe it was fire crews. And supposedly, I heard that they had inadvertently picked up a heat signature from something that, you know, could possibly have fit the pattern for a Bigfoot. Have you heard anything about that, or whether or not that was pursued any further, or was that kind of swept under the rug?
I haven't heard that. That's the first for me.
Okay. Just curious, because I thought it was really interesting. If they would have caught it on the Forestry Service, I don't know if they'd have been very candid about it.
Yeah, the Forestry Service that I've dealt with, the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and even the Forestry Service of Pennsylvania, I've had the opportunity to talk with several of their officers on different occasions. And the Forestry Department, their stance on things was, you know, I have to see it to believe it. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I have to see it to believe it. Game Commission officers from the Pennsylvania State Game Commission that I've talked to pretty much poo-poo the idea of Bigfoot existing. They tell me, oh, we're out here all the time, and we've got officers in the woods all the time, and nobody ever reports anything, or nobody ever sees anything. But when you talk in candidly and off the record, you get, well, I keep my ears and eyes open, and I haven't seen anything, but I'm always alert, and if I hear something, I want to go check it out to see if it's real. So some of the people I've talked to seem to have an interest in it, but either they're told not to talk about it, or they just haven't seen anything.
Kind of sounds like pilots and UFOs, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We did have an interesting case happen I guess it was in October. There was a gentleman who's working as a park ranger in one of our state parks who had a sighting of a creature that was leaning on an embankment. And this gentleman, like I said, he's a park ranger. He goes around the park and checks game trails and drives to the park in his pickup truck to make sure things are copacetic, nobody's out there poaching, you know, and keeps an eye on the park. And as he was driving down one of these maintenance roads, he saw this thing standing on a 10-foot embankment, and it was pulling berries into its mouth and eating them. And he stopped and got out of his truck and began to run at this animal. And he said it turned and shuffled down the embankment and took several steps before dropping to all fours and taking off running into the woods. And at first he thought, it's just a bear. But then he saw the Jacob's Creature photos, and he changed his mind. He thinks it was not a bear. He thinks it was something else.
Well, talk about this,
Jacob. It's one of the few that I've investigated.
What's up with this Jacob's Creature? I mean, is that can you describe it? Talk about it a
little
bit.
Well, again, as I talked a little bit about earlier, the pictures were taken in September of 07, excuse me, and they were taken by Rick Jacobs, and he put out a game camera to capture pictures of buck in the area, and he was getting ready for hunting season, put the camera out there, and captured they released three photos to the public, and there's several on the internet if you look for them. One of them shows bear cubs in it, and the other two show this unusual-looking animal that the Game Commission and many people have written off as a mangy bear. But the dimensions of it, the height of it, the leg proportion of it, to me, doesn't look like a bear. It looks like something else. What it is, I don't know. I've never seen anything like it before. But the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization was very quick at coming forward and saying it's a juvenile Sasquatch. I don't think it's a Sasquatch, but again, I don't think it's a bear. I don't know what it is.
Well, I'm looking at the pictures. I can see the cubs. And it looks like this, it honestly looks like a Bigfoot.
Don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's got long legs. I mean, how is this different than a Bigfoot? Do you have specific things, well, it's not a Bigfoot, or it could be, or this is why?
Most of the reports that we get, and there are some reports, but not many, but most of the reports that we get are talking about an upright bipedal creature. And in the photos that you see, this animal appears to be on all fours. It's a quadruped. It doesn't fit the size proportions of a typical Bigfoot sighting, but then again, we've never really gotten too many reports of a juvenile creature. We do have them on file, and we do get them, but I've never seen a Bigfoot, so I can't say if it is definitively a Bigfoot or not. And to me, it doesn't look like a bear. What it is, I have no idea.
Well, it actually is. I'm looking at comparing the size of it with these cubs. It's not a whole lot bigger than those cubs.
No, it's not. It is a little bit bigger than they are, in my opinion. The leg proportion and the curvature of the spine and everything, it is a little bit bigger than they are, but you're right, not much bigger.
Hmm. Interesting. So what do you foresee for the Bigfoot community? What do you see coming down the pike?
Just continuing our research, especially after this hoax and debacle that we've gone through, I think some of the researchers are going to have to step up what we're doing and work harder to get the evidence and prove to the media and the world that this isn't just a rubber suit in a freezer. I think as long as we continue to push forward and share the information with everybody and what we're finding in the field and present it in a scientific manner without the tongue-in-cheek involved in it, we may have some success.
So would you like to see sponsors, more sponsors, corporate sponsors, benefactors that can provide?
Well, I would like to see some sponsorship or some kind of grants or funding release to study this, but I don't think it's going to happen until the body is actually produced and science really starts to take a serious look at this. Right now, Bigfoot is nothing more than a commercial, you know, messing with Sasquatch, Jack Link, Church.
Yeah.
ice cream commercials. They take the Patterson film and they throw it in commercials, sell cars and, you know, trips to the Pacific Northwest. It's become an advertisement, and it's pretty sad.
Well, it's almost as if you don't understand something, ridicule it.
Exactly, and a lot of folks don't. They don't take the time. That's what the sad part is. I get laughed at and scoffed at by a lot of the naysayers because they don't take the time to do the homework and realize that there's more to this than just the story of a guy in a costume running around in the woods. There's footprint casts, there's hair samples, there's thousands upon thousands of sighting reports from legitimate people, not fakes and frauds like you've seen, unfortunately, in the mainstream media of recent.
And from all walks of life and very reputable people, park rangers, police officers, lot of people who have nothing to gain by making those reports. And, you know, and for the most part, they're very, very consistent and have been over the years.
Right. Yeah, that's true. A lot of the sighting reports, there's not much differentiation in the reports themselves.
And one of the things I think is really remarkable about it is, and I'm no primatologist, and my philosophy is pretty close to yours, Eric, but it just seems to me that these creatures possess a lot of characteristics of the great apes, and some of the behaviors that we've seen in mountain gorillas and orangutans. These creatures seem to embody much the same way, and so that leads me to believe that there's something more going on here, and you know, maybe we are dealing with a very elusive primate that's indigenous to North America.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Unfortunately, a lot of the sighting reports describe this animal as looking more human-like than primate. So at this point,
For lack of a better explanation, but you know, some of the characteristics. I mean, you know, we all know about the smell of Bigfoot. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the great apes also emit an odor when they're alarmed as kind of like a warning or a way to let people know their territory. And, of course, Sasquatch, Bigfoot's been rumored to have that kind of odor. The other thing that I think is really remarkable about it is, like, most of the great apes are pretty much nonviolent. I mean, that doesn't say that they won't go off the handle every once in a while, but primarily when they're threatened. And this creature, whatever it is, doesn't seem to have any animosity towards humans. Quite the opposite.
Yeah, for the most part, you're right.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's not going to come up and hug us, but by the same token, it seems to have a curiosity to some degree about us, but it also is extremely wary of us.
Right. It's more of a curiosity-type factor versus an aggressive-type creature. You're absolutely right. And that's
certainly a sign of higher intelligence.
Right. It's more elusive, more docile than anything else. You know, it's very wary of man, but it's also very curious at the same time.
Well, here's a question from Dusty. What do you think of the Patterson film?
I think it's a video of film capturing a real Sasquatch walking on a creek bank in taken in 1967 in Bluff Creek, California. I think it's the real thing.
All right.
Yeah, I agree with you, Eric. Couldn't agree with you more.
Have you heard, Eric, have you heard the stories that there are actually a couple of other Bigfoots in that picture that are obstructed by trees? That this is the female, you know, walking toward them, and there may be a male and a juvenile?
I've heard that. There are researchers that feel that there may be more than one creature in that video. I personally cannot see it. I've looked at that film. I've seen that film hundreds of times. I don't see what's in the trees. Unfortunately for me, and I'm not saying there isn't anything in that picture, if you've got to point it out to me and say, there it is, then that really, to me, isn't a Bigfoot. If I could look at the picture and say, yeah, I see it, okay, without any guidance or somebody pointing a red circle around it or pointing it out, I don't see it.
Why do you think folks are so hell-bent to disprove the Patterson film?
I don't know. There's skeptics trying not to disprove everything that we're trying to study, as far as the paranormal is concerned. I don't know why
it's certainly been exposed to a tremendous amount of scrutiny. It's been broken down, and some of the recent programs, on the History Channel or Discovery or whatever, pretty convincing evidence that just by the sheer physiology of the way, kinesiology of the way the creature moves, that it can't possibly be some yahoo in a gorilla suit from Planet of the Apes.
I don't think it is. I really can't account for all the scrutiny of the film. I think it might be just people looking for their 15 minutes of fame, and they know that it cannot be proven legitimate, so they're going to try to debunk it and get their 15 minutes of fame and say, hey, I proved there was a zipper or a buckle or a bell or whatever. I think that's a reason why people go after that, is because it can't be proven it's real.
Well, Jeff Meldrum weighed in on it and, studied the muscle movement, among others, and that was meaningful. I have a lot of respect for him and his scientific opinion, and I really respect him for, doing what he's doing. And I know he's got to be getting a lot of crap from fellow scientists because, this is just not real when it comes to me.
I had the pleasure in May of this year to be presenting at a conference with Dr. Meldrum. He sat right next to me at the presenter's table. We had a table set up, and he was selling autographed copies of his book and talking to folks and stuff like that. And he's an extremely intelligent man, more so than I ever would have guessed or thought. He's very well versed on primatology and anatomy and locomotion. I mean, the guy knows his stuff. And for him to be studying this phenomenon, It's a real pleasure to know the man and to have him in the field with us. To me, he's the new Grover Krantz. And for those who don't know Grover Krantz was an anthropologist that was a professor at Washington State University, and he studied this creature all throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, up until his passing in early 2000, in 2001, I think it was.
Yeah, he really stepped up to the plate in regards to legitimizing a lot of the evidence that researchers that have gone before us and want their hard work to show that a lot of it was not fake and that there could be something really going on here.
Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, we've got a lot of legitimate scientists in the field right now. Not a lot, I should say, but we do have scientists in the field right now that are coming forward. We had a primatologist who passed away just recently, Dr. Derek Swindler, and he was against Bigfoot existing until he was shown the Achilles tendon of the Skookum cat from out in Washington State. And he looked at that thing, and he was pretty convinced of that, and that changed his mind. We've got some legitimate wildlife biologists in the field right now. We have Dr. Bindernagel. I believe his name is Gregory Bambanek. He's a wildlife biologist. We've got Tim Cassidy. He's not a doctor, doesn't have a doctorate degree yet, but he has a degree in biology from Unity College in Maine. We've got several biologists in the field that are studying this seriously. Dr. Jeff Melvin is a primatologist. Jimmy Chilcutt, as we talked earlier, he's a forensics specialist for the Conroe Police Division in Texas, in their forensics department. He's an expert on dermal ridges and primates and non-primates and humans, and he's convinced there's something out there. So there are legitimate people in the field spending the time and looking at this seriously. The one problem is there's not many of them. I'm hoping that as time evolves and we collect more evidence, the amateurs collect more evidence, more scientists will start to look our way and start to take this a little more seriously.
Well, here's an interesting concept from Janine in the chat room. Maybe the Bigfoot take a mate for life and don't reproduce as often as other animal species. Any comment on that?
Don't know.
Yeah, it's hard.
I wish I could comment on that, but I really don't know. Unfortunately, what I know, I've studied and learned over the years. I don't profess myself as an expert. I'm just somebody who's followed me for a while.
You're not
educated
an expert
on it, yes. No, I wouldn't consider myself an expert on it.
Damn, Grant.
There are no experts.
Imagine that.
Oh, I thought we were talking with an expert here. You know, get him on.
Yeah.
I've never considered myself an expert on the subject. Educated on it, yes. I would consider myself fairly well educated on it. I've spent 28 years studying it. Do I know everything there is to know about Bigfoot? No. Do any of us know everything there is to know about Bigfoot? No. There's a lot more than I do. That I look up to, and I study their research, and they're mentors to me. Dr. Meldrum, Dr. Bindernagel, those folks know a lot more scientific information than I do. There are folks in the field that know a lot more as far as historical information. There's a good friend of mine, Henry May, that we call him the walking Squatchopedia. He knows everything there is to know about Bigfoot. It's amazing. And there's good researchers in the field that spend hours and days and nights and money out of their own pocket to do the research that I have a lot of respect for. Too many to name, unfortunately. But there's a lot more qualified people in the field than I am.
Well, you're humble if nothing else, huh? All right.
I just think I'm me.
Hey, that's good. All right, so we've been talking about a lot of things tonight. We've been talking about the recent Bigfoot hoax, the body hoax, and got a call from Steve Krolzen, which was good. It was actually good to hear his side in his own words, in his own voice. I appreciated that. And that we talked about all the dynamics of that and, what an interesting thing. I mean, Bigfoot research, great topic. Just great, great topic. So we wish you the best. Now let's finish up with some different things in terms of websites and conferences. Do you want to state your website again and just briefly talk about your conference, when it is, and how people can attend?
Sure. The website is the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. That's the name of our organization. We've been around for going on 10 years now. The website is pabigfootsociety.com. It's a pretty decent website. We've got some photos on there, a lot of sighting reports from Pennsylvania collected from our own personal research from other databases as well for the people to get on there and read about. We have ways to contact the researchers on the website. We have a forum on there, and, of course, information if people want to file a report or even consider joining the group. We're always looking for new members to get out in the field. The conference that we hold, this is the eighth one that we've done. It's the 2008 East Coast Bigfoot Conference. It's going to take place in about 35 days from now, on September 27th. And it will take place in a small town called Jeanette, Pennsylvania, where I'm from, just outside of Pittsburgh, PA, about 30 miles to the east. It's a three-day event, but the conference is only one day. And it consists of guest speakers. We have some great guest speakers coming in from the eastern United States to talk about their research and their findings. We have displays of collected Bigfoot evidence, hair samples, casts, that sort of thing. We have photographs for people to take a look at things that we believe might be Bigfoot evidence, like we talked about the nest or tree breaks, stuff like that. We have vendor tables if anybody wants to come out and pick up a Bigfoot souvenir, a T-shirt, or a plastic cast to take home with them, you know, stuff like that we have available. And we also have the world's biggest Bigfoot auction. I'm proud to say that because there's not many like it. We have folks from all over the country send in donations to us that we auction off to help pay for and cover the cost of the conference. And there are things in there from very rare and valuable DVDs and movies from the 1970s, autograph books from such folks as Dr. John Bindernagel, Jeff Meldrum, John Green on the forefather of the Bigfoot research. So collectibles, T-shirts, you name it, it's in the auction. A lot of good stuff that people can come and take home with them as a souvenir.
Yeah.
For more information on the conference, hotel information, about the whole weekend involved, they can go to that website. It's you can go to our website, which is pabigfootsociety.com, or they can go to the conference website, which is East Coast Bigfoot Conference. Weebly, which is spelled WEEBLY.com. That's East Coast Bigfoot Conference. Weebly.com. And if folks are interested, you better get moving because the reserve seats are almost sold out.
Yeah, that sounds like a great time. I'd love to attend. Let me just take a brief minute and talk about some of the topics that we're going to be talking about at the Paranexus Conference in October in Tampa. We're going to be going into forensic evidence analysis, give some tips on audio and video and photo and so forth, so you can learn some new stuff, perhaps enhance your skills in audio and evidence review and analysis. We've got a workshop on urban legends and paranormal research by Chris Balzano. Kevin Costa, who actually studied under Dr. Roll, is going to be doing a workshop on parapsychology, understanding the client factor in hauntings. I'm going to be talking about the psychology of paranormal research a little bit. We've got Gregory Kent going to be doing a workshop on table tipping and spirit communication. Yari going to be talking about collaboration and working together. We've got Lori Pablo, listening to your psychic self, activating your sixth sense. She's also going to be discussing some psychic self-defense topics. Denise Roth going to be talking about how to secure investigation locations. Our very own Grant Ruben Dunn is going to be talking about apparition or hallucination. That's a fascinating topic. And, of course, Dusty Smith going to be talking about extreme hauntings on Friday night. We've got her scheduled in. She's going to be showing the episode of A Haunting in Florida and then discussing some of the different aspects of that case, extreme hauntings. And then our good friend Joey Ward, Managing Client Expectations, The Anatomy of a Professional Investigation. And we have a couple of others there. So it's going to be a great time. Hope you'll join us there. Take a look at paranexus.org. We'd also love to have you as a member. Paranexus is a professional association of paranormal researchers in all of the fields, ufology, cryptozoology, parapsychology, hauntings, etc. So love to have you there. Next week, we are going to be having on our show Linda Fell. She's a psychic medium, I believe, out in Washington. Heck, you might even con her into giving you a reading if you wanted to. She sounds like a very interesting person. I've talked to her. So we're looking forward to having her next week. We've got Project Camelot coming up on the week after that. So some stuff coming up. We've got some interesting guests actually scheduled that I don't have yet on the schedule, but we'll get them up. Eric, we really appreciate you taking time right after work and joining us last minute. Really
thank you
for that. Always great to talk to you, and interesting, and appreciate all your insight on the hoax and just Bigfoot research in general. We'd like to say thanks to our listeners. We appreciate you taking the time as well and joining us tonight. And Grant, as always, thanks for showing up again, dude.
Yeah. My pleasure, Doug.
And one last one. We'd like to extend our warmest thanks to the Skype gods for not dropping any of our calls tonight.
They truly did smile upon us this evening.
Yes, and we didn't even have to appease this week, right?
Didn't have to make a sacrifice or anything.
All right, folks. Have a great week, great weekend. We'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
night, in the shadows, in the sky, it's Paranexus Universe.